Whenever we read the story of the Exodus, I always seem to notice when the Israelites, finding themselves lost and hungry in the wilderness, turn to God, the very one who delivered them from slavery and oppression, and point the finger of blame. Why, they ask, of Moses and God, did you get us into this situation? We had it so good back there in Egypt. Why did we have to come here where we are suddenly vulnerable and exposed? I think it's safe to say that their memory was not entirely accurate. In an earlier chapter, we can read that the Israelites had groaned under their slavery and cried out. Out of the slavery, their cry for help rose up against God. God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But now, not so long after that, they suddenly remembered the story a little differently, didn't they? But that's the thing about memory. Sometimes we get it right. Often we do not. Either way, memory shapes who we are. It gives meaning to our lives. And it has so much to do with our walk with God. Of course, memory can have a sweetness that nothing can match. It can be a great pleasure to go to the home where you grew up and pick up the old photo albums and remember an earlier time. Now, some of those memories can also be hard, but hopefully most of what we find in those old books gives us joy. My wife and I are coming up on our first year anniversary. It goes fast, doesn't it? And though our wedding day is pretty much a total blur of joy and activity, I looked back on that day with great pleasure. The hour I spent with my two best friends as we got ready, seeing my soon-to-be wife, Jo, in the courtyard as we had our first pictures taken, switching sides during the service to serve communion to each other's families, dancing with our old friends and families well into the night. We were married in early May, so as we get farther and farther into spring, the air and the smells are starting to feel familiar to me again, and I find myself blessed with the return of these wonderful memories. These kinds of memories are wonderful gifts, and all great things come from God, don't they? These are the memories that make me want to say, thank you. But we see in Exodus that memories don't always work to our advantage. The Israelites do not remember correctly. The trouble, though, is that a memory that is wrong, or maybe just isn't quite right, can be just as formative and life-changing as a memory that's correct. It's kind of scary when you think about it. Of course, it helps that those who gave us this incredible story of the Israelites were clued into this. You can tell by the way that it's written. The Israelites didn't just say it was much better for us back then in Egypt when life wasn't perfect, but at least we knew where our next meal was coming from. No, what they said to Moses was, and I quote, as Mary read very well, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have taken us to die in the wilderness? We told you in Egypt, let us alone and let us serve the Egyptians." Now, I am obviously not Jewish, but talk about chutzpah. The definition of chutzpah might be helpful here. Think shameless audacity, impudence. It's a pretty cheeky thing to say, isn't it? But you know, they must have had at least a pretty good relationship with Moses and with God for them to say something quite that bold, even if their memory needed to be fine-tuned just a bit. But what about when the memories that shape us are not only painful, but deeply personal as well? How do we remember hurt in a way that doesn't do even more damage to us? How does God liberate us from the wounds of the past? And what role does memory play in that Exodus? One of my seminary professors is a theologian named Miroslav Volf. He recently wrote a book called The End of Memory, remembering rightly in a violent world. About this question of how do we remember? How we as Christians remember being wounded, but do so without becoming bitter. About how we remember, or perhaps even learn to forget, in ways that build up God's vision of the world. Can we, he asks, have a memory that doesn't gloss over the past, yet is free of the animosity that makes our hearts brittle? Is this kind of remembering even possible? The force of Wolff's argument comes from his own story, which centers on a particular set of painful memories. In the early 80s, in communist Yugoslavia, he was summoned to compulsory military service. Not only did this interrupt his own studies, but he was also held suspect by the communist army that had called him to service. This because his background presented a number of avenues of potential dissent. He was a student of theology. He was a Christian. He was married to an American. He had studied in America. And he was an advocate of nonviolence. All this got their attention. Since he might possibly have been a threat, he was interrogated at great length by the military police. He describes his interrogator as a man named Captain G. Years later, the scars of his interrogation remained. So the question for Wolff became not only what did he remember about this, but how did he remember it? The question has shaped his life and his writings. And it led him to a rather important observation about memory. He writes, "My soul was at stake in the way that I remembered Captain G." His soul was at stake in the way that he remembered this person who had done him harm. This is kind of a different way of seeing the world, isn't it? It suggests that we have a great sense of responsibility to remember rightly. That's his phrase, to remember rightly. Because if we don't, he notes, we humans have this troubling tendency to turn what he calls the shield of memory into the sword of memory. The shield of memory means that we at times really must remember things. It's really important sometimes, or else we might lose ourselves altogether. He writes of Elie Wiesel's call to remember the atrocities committed against the Jewish people during the Second World War, lest it happen again, lest those who went through it lose what is left of their souls. This kind of memory of hurt is important. I think that this shield of memory is also an important part of our own personal journeys, especially when we dig into our own lives to see those places where harm has been done to us. If we can't see them for what they are, we often find it impossible to liberate ourselves from their corrosive influence. This kind of memory is also important. But how often this shield does become a sword? And often because we have not remembered rightly. Remember what Wolff said. My soul was at stake in the way that I remembered Captain G. The Israelites did not remember right when they hearkened back to the good life in Egypt. We do not remember rightly when we look at a conflict and say, it'll never resolve because there's just too much history there. Isn't that a familiar phrase? We do not remember rightly when we lose sight of the scope of God's story or of the role that each of us is called to play in redeeming the past. Indeed, we see that the Easter story, the Christian story, is about how God takes the wounds of the past and forges them into a new hope and a new life. And remember that tonight is not just about one story, though what a story it is, but about all the grand narratives of God's love for the world and how they all play together like different instrument sections in one elaborate symphony. God's creation of the world, the liberation of the Israelites from captivity, the resurrection of Jesus. With each of these, we get a glimpse of the stories that exist in God's memory. How can God not remember with love the hope of the new creation and the promise of new relationship with each one of us? How can God not remember with an aching heart the cries of Israelites enslaved? How can God not be filled with joy by the promise that the new covenant holds? You see, when our memories are filtered not through our own minds, but rather through the framework of God's memory, we come so much closer to seeing the world as God sees it. And if we can see the Israelites' exodus and Christ's death and resurrection as the two pivotal events in human history, we might be able to remember all the events in our life, from the simple moments to the great events, from the places where we were hurt to the moments where we experienced grace, from the depths of grief to the tears of joy. We would be able to remember these moments as God remembers them. Then we would be remembering rightly. This is how God's story becomes our story. You see, this is the part we play in redeeming the past. This is how light enters our darkness. This is how the flame, kindled by our memories of grace, shines new light into our broken hearts. And this is how each one of us begins to share that light and build, brick by brick and memory by memory, a new temple of forgiveness and reconciliation. This, I believe, is God's vision for us. And this is the promise of resurrection that we experience every day in the here and now, as God's memory breathes new life and new hope into those places in our heart that we thought had died. This is the promise of new life. Happy Easter.